Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guests today are Martin Seidel, Thomas Miner, and Kent Iverson from the newly formed Austrian Audio Company. First of all, the face of radio is really changing. It's going to be changing fast in the near future. iHeartRadio, which used to be known as Clear Channel, has 850 stations in the United States alone, plus stations in Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. The problem is the company is $20 billion in debt. Now, iHeartRadio is owned by two private equity groups, Bain Capital and Thomas Lee Partners. And what they did was they decided they're going to acquire as many radio stations and as many radio groups as they could. And this was in the early 2000s when this began to happen. So they bought all of these stations and groups at the height of the market. Now, like with a lot of companies that we've seen, and especially one which I've talked about recently, going into debt to acquire other companies or to acquire assets many times doesn't work out, and this is one of those cases where now all of a sudden it's a huge conglomerate, huge station group, but the big problem is when you're $20 billion in debt and can't pay off your debts, and in fact they're having trouble making payroll, that's a big problem. Yes, what's happening is iHeartRadio is running out of cash, and as a result has to restructure its debt. But the big problem is most of the debtors are saying, don't think so. So what this looks like is iHeartRadio will probably have to go into bankruptcy. And most likely that means that a lot of these station assets are going to be sold off. Why is this a good thing? Well, ultimately, I think what will happen is there'll be a lot of stations that will go to other station groups that have the money to be able to do something and hopefully something creative with them. Radio is in the doldrums right now, and even though everybody listens to it, the number of listeners isn't all that terrible, and for the amount of time they're listening isn't all that terrible, but the advertising dollars are going down very, very fast, and basically listeners are kind of disgruntled with the whole thing. The reason why is if you listen to radio, AM or FM, and any of the most popular stations anyway, we're not talking about NPR or anything like that, when you begin to listen for a while, you find out that they have these commercial pods, which last for 6 and 7 minutes. And boy, they're a drag. And now it's getting to the point where now they can't even fill the commercial pods with commercials. So you're getting a lot of PSAs or public service announcements as a result. So you find that many former listeners are now beginning to listen to online radio, or they're beginning to listen to Spotify or Apple Music or any of the other alternatives instead, which is not good for radio. So this may be the first shoe to drop in big radio. Big radio is owned by big money. But if they're not making big money, I think you might start to see that some reasonable owners, some reasonable investors come in and really make a change in radio. At least I have my fingers crossed that's going to be happening, because radio is just not working the way it is right now, and it's only going to get worse before it gets better. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. The second edition of my social media promotion for musicians handbook is now available on Amazon, iBooks, Ingram, and a bookstore near you. It's the manual for marketing yourself, your brand, and your music online, and covers how to use virtually every important online platform for promotion. Also, check out my courses at bobbyosinskicourses.com. I want to talk about microphone stands for a little bit. Microphone stands are very, very low tech. They're not very sexy to talk about, but the fact of the matter is we all own at least one. If you're a musician, you probably own a microphone stand or two or three or 10 if you have a studio. If we go back and we look at the history of microphone stands, that part of the industry was pretty much dominated by one company for a long time, and that's Atlas Sound. And Atlas Sound made a variety of microphone stands, just about a microphone stand for every application that you can think of. The only problem is they got complacent and everything, and nothing changed for years and years, even though some of the products, especially like the boom stands, were very, very inferior. One exception to this is there was a company that made really fantastic boom stands here in California called Starboard. And those are the ones that you found in most of the film studios, and you found them in most of the big recording studios because they were really the best as far as boom stands were concerned, and certainly beat the ones that Atlas Sound were making at the time. That being said, it took a long time before any competitors came on the scene. And one of the first was K&M out of Germany. And they were distributed by AKG for a long time. K&M made the best boom stands and probably still do. Their boom stands are pretty fantastic. And even though they're more expensive, you got a better product. And this was the first serious competitor to Atlas. But by the 90s, all of a sudden, we started to get more and more competitors. Ultimate Support, Latch Lake. There was a lot of different ones that came in. They didn't quite ever get the market share of Atlas, and Atlas has never quite gone away, but there are more and more getting into it. Most recently, 3 or 4 years ago, a company called Triad Orbit got into the business. And Triad Orbit came out of the auto business in Detroit. So he had some people that really knew metalwork and knew it well and could take it to the next level. And in fact, these stands are pretty fantastic. And they came up with some things like, for instance, dual arm booms and a dual snare mic where with one stand you can do both under and over the top of the snare, things like that. Very innovative and built like a tank. It's one of those things that you spend a premium amount for a stand from Triad Orbit, but the fact of the matter is it will live in your studio and never break for not only the rest of your life, but probably your kids' life and your grandkids' life as well. These things are just made so well. So I recently saw that Tascam and Shure were coming out with microphone stands as well, and it made me wonder, where were you guys all this time? Where were all these other manufacturers? Where was like Audio Technica and all of this? You would think that it would be natural for a microphone company to come out with a microphone stand. That didn't really happen. AKG, of course, which we're going to talk more about in a little bit, saw the light on this and they licensed K&M. But it just seems like it was an opportunity lost for a lot of companies for a lot of years. And now it's probably too late. Granted, it's a very low-tech industry. It's all brute force and microphone stands are heavy. But on the other hand, it's something that every musician, every studio, every engineer, everybody in the business requires. And not only do they require one, but usually many more as well. Recently, Harman International decided to close the AKG Vienna operation, which was a real shame after 70 years of being an industry leader in transducer technology. Usually a closure like that means that a lot of good people and industrial knowledge disappear, but not in this case. The good news is that the basic engineering and marketing core of AKG has restarted as Austrian Audio, and new designs and products are expected soon. I spoke with CEO Martin Seidel, CTO Thomas Miner, and head of marketing and PR Kent Iverson via Skype from Vienna, where they laid out their plans for the new company. Tell me about the launch of Austrian Audio. When did you officially launch? When did AKG come to an end?
Well, this is basically two different dates because when did Austrian Audio official launch? I mean, completely official when you were registered in the Austrian authority books, it was early June 2017. So I think it was the 9th of June, if I'm correct now. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the official start of the company when it was registered as a GmbH, so what you call a limited company. And we started our operation in this office 1st of July.
When did you know that the end was near for AKG? Was this something that was a surprise or did you see it coming?
Well, you know, it's that's a very wide question, to be honest. Did we see it coming? I mean, a lot of things happened over the last, really, I would say 5 years already. You know, a lot of changes, consolidations, all the different sites were brought together. Part of the talents were consolidated, like financing was consolidated at one site, sourcing and purchasing was, you know, consolidated. So things happened all the time. Actually, it was pretty clear that that basically what would remain as AKG headquarters in Vienna was basically the product management and the R&D department. And that was, I think, what everybody thought until well, officially last September, so a little bit more than a year now, when the official announcement came out by Harman that they will close Vienna's factory and offices, and so all the headquarters, we will let go all the people that worked here, so all the R&D, all product management, all sales, marketing, and all the supportive departments.
So it's not easy to start a company, and it's especially not easy to start a company when another one is closing and keeping those people intact. How did you manage that? That's quite a feat, I think.
Yeah, you're right. You are right. It was a task. You know, Thomas and I, we know each other since many, many years. Thomas was heading the R&D department at AKG. I was heading the sales department globally at AKG for many years. So we knew each other.
Yeah. And I think I could, it's really a lot about the personal context that the two of us kept all the time, and also the personal context that we kept to the R&D team, to the product management marketing team. So even after we left, the two of us left AKG, I mean, we were all like a big family and always kept in touch and met each other from on a regular basis. And so once we knew, I mean, we spread the idea rather fast, so that people were caught fire with this idea.
Yeah, I would like to add, it's really, I think we inspired people because to clarify this a little bit, Thomas and I were not there anymore when the company was closed.
Ah.
So we left earlier. I left even 3 years ago, and Thomas left a year later.
Maybe that was good because we could look at the whole story from a more relaxed position.
Yes, we looked from outside. Yeah. We heard when we were outside doing other things. And so we were not directly involved and shocked and ran around like, what are we going to do next? It was really more, what the hell is going on with this, you know, our beloved old company? And we were pretty organized in sitting together, Thomas and I, and trying to discuss what could be done, who could be partners, who could be customers, who could be investors. And frankly, we started that early, and I must say pretty efficient, so that when we approached the team at AKG with a plan, we had a firm plan. We could tell them what's the financing, what's the plans, what will be the next 2 to 3 years, and here is a complete project. It's not just an idea.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was also the big differentiator to all the other ideas that came up during this time, because it's natural that people come up with this idea, yes, we're going to do something ourselves. And we also said that, but we already had a plan. We had a solid background financing and all these things.
Well, the financing is the key, because especially with a large crew like that, you can't keep it going unless you have some money. Did you have orders for something that financed it, or was there a financial backer?
In principle, yes, you can say so. We had a big customer who committed to orders and to projects he wanted to do with us.
Yeah. I mean, basically, you need to look at Austrian Audio currently as a split company, if you want to say so. I mean, basically, the one thing is we're working on our, you know, setting up, building up, roadmap, visions, missions. On the other hand, of course, we have to bring money in. So we are working as an ODM R&D team as well. And in that function, we do have commitment in customers where we have ongoing work to do.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you consider yourself a manufacturer or an engineering entity, but I guess you're both at this point.
Well, we are both. Currently, we are engineering and R&D, but we can't say too much, but we can say that much, that you will see products with a brand of Austrian Audio, and we will be the manufacturer.
And is manufacturing going to be done in-house, or is it going to be done like everyone else does it, overseas, and then maybe quality control in-house?
You know, I think that the part of this great tradition in Austria is this made in Austria of some things. And we all know, if you want to sell a headphone from 1995, you can't do that. But if you want to make some serious products for the pro audio industry, and if you want to you know, to make sure that the quality is under your control and that you can quickly maneuver if something has to be done. We decided internally that some of the technical, sophisticated product needs to be made in Austria. That's what we're going to do.
Do you see yourself staying in the transducer business, so to speak, or going outside of it? Transducer meaning microphones, headphones, the traditional AKG major products.
Definitely it's a starting point, yes.
But definitely we're also going to look outside of this area, everything that's connected with it. I mean, there's such a lot of developments going on in this area, all that's connected with sound, with headphones, especially with 3D sound that is coming, 3D recording. And so this is touching not only the transducer, but also the whole algorithm that's connected to it, the transmission methods connected to it. And so this is the area you can imagine where we definitely spread out our field.
Noise canceling is to clean up.
Let's go there for a second. So transducers really haven't changed much in 100 years. Basic idea of analog. You don't agree?
Yeah. I mean, the main, there are always companies and researchers that experimenting with new principles. But maybe there's also a good reason why it hasn't changed a lot from the basic principle. I mean, but there are new materials all the time. There are new manufacturing methods, especially with more precision. And this is the way how these, let's say, the moving coil transducers continuously improved over time. I mean, they're radical. I know that there are many radical other concepts. People are playing around with electrostatic or orthodynamics or piezo or laser microphones and other stuff like that. It didn't really make it to a big commercial success. Maybe there's a good reason for it that the moving coil principle made its way. Yeah, but you never know. We're looking around and we're finding if there's other options. Yeah,
we are. Let me put it that way. We are open. We have our ears and eyes also in other projects, which are technology-driven projects that deal with different driver technologies. So we have a project going on that. So we are not blind that there are things happening left and right. But currently our focus is on the moving coil transducer, optimizing it. And also, you know, you could say combining this analog moving coil world with a lot of digital options which are coming our way. Combining different coils, combining different, interfaces.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How important is DSP in today's world for what you're doing? Is this something that's just naturally incorporated into all products going forward?
Well, obviously, it is incorporated in any form of wireless microphones as anyway, right? And then, yes, of course, it will be, especially if you think of headphones, for example, and if you think of a world of virtual realities and 3D sound, then DSP becomes a major factor.
Well, what do you think about immersive audio? How important is that for the future?
That's an interesting question. I mean, people are expecting a lot from that. And they're the big guys. I mean, they're all working on concepts on VR, augmented reality, mixed reality. We saw that Google Glass was not successful, but maybe other concepts are. On the other side, there's also these concepts are around for quite a long time. So therefore I'm saying it's interesting. I think there is huge potential in it. Yeah. And in 3D audio, there were also a lot of improvements in the past. And as you said, connected with the strength of signal processing that's available now for decent prices and with enough processing power. So I think it can be done. There are good things around. And for most of these virtual reality things, the video, the picture is quite good already. I think sound is still lacking behind, and this is definitely an area where we want to contribute and yeah. and boost the sound so that you get a real image and a convincing impression.
Well, how
so quite lengthy answer? Yes, we're looking into it.
Oh, engineering answer. Yeah.
How important is the capture of immersive audio as opposed to doing it in post, creating an immersive sound field in post?
That's the area where we're currently the most things are happening. Yeah, I mean, we're coming from Dolby Digital 5.1, 7.1, that's around for quite some time. That's a source-based, you know, that's a speaker source-based surround system. I think, and of course, if you now do other loudspeaker arrays, in a circle, more loudspeakers. If you do headphones or headphones with more speakers and things like that, I mean, the source material is not prepared for that. Yeah. Hmm. So I think the way forward is definitely to go for, and that is called a source-based, not a speaker-based, but a source-based 3D sound. So where the signal contains the signal itself and the information of direction, and then let the playback system figure out how this is best processed so that you get the real image. So then you can use any source material for any playback system. And I think this is the way to go forward, and definitely we are supporting this.
Back to Austrian Audio for a second. Do you see the Pro Audio category as your major customer, or are you looking beyond that?
Well, we are definitely looking, well, we need to be careful. It's our heritage, that's where we're coming from, and we definitely will strive for sound that comes from the Pro Audio industry. Are we ending there? No, we are not. There will be projects, or there are already projects going into, well, it's even more difficult to categorize it. Is this lifestyle sound, or is it a consumer, or whatever you want to call it, right?
Yeah.
But there are other legs where we have knowledge because we have a lot of heritage. Please bear in mind there's automotive, which is becoming still more and more a big topic. And for us in audio, it doesn't matter if a driver is driving or if a computer is driving. For us in audio, it still matters mm-hmm. that the thing sounds in there, that you have an active noise canceling there, that you have separated entertainment for separated passengers, for example. So that's another field for Austrian Audio. And then, we also look into what you call consumer headphones on a high level. So we are not looking for competing with another $99.99 headphone that is sold, Best Buy or whatever, right? So because we are not big enough to play around with the Sonys and Philips and all these guys in the world, right?
Yeah.
Not yet, at least. Give us another 2 years. but I think there is extremely good knowledge base in house here for high-end consumer headphones that include very beneficial features like active noise canceling at a top level, because that's what the engineers were deeply into in the technology over the last years. And again, this technology again sweeps over to Pro as well, and to automotive a lot, and probably even to hearing aid.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, and earbuds, things like that.
We first make very loud headphones that you then buy hearing aids from.
Well, what's interesting to me is the fact that a few years ago you had Beats headphones, which sounded god-awful, and they were getting a premium. And I always ask myself, why doesn't a major pro audio headphone manufacturer actually try to get into that particular end of the business? And it never happened. And Beats was the predominant player for a long time until Apple picked them up. So there's obviously a space there for high-end headphones, but I think it's definitely marketing driven. It's not one of those things that you can just build something that sounds great. There really has to be a big marketing campaign behind it in order to reach that kind of a customer.
I think you're right. I think this is something to look at. I think not at the stage where Austrian Audio right now is. We definitely have the capabilities to make headphones that sound good enough. That's not the problem. To do a very large marketing campaign rolling out like Beats did in the past, I think to copy that, it's nearly impossible because that was a model that was done. I think you need to attach some additional benefit to the customer to it. It needs to be either extremely intuitive in using it. Do people still want cables? Less and less so,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think there needs to be... apart from a great marketing campaign, I think there needs to be one good idea that makes the use of such a next generation consumer headphones very convenient, very intuitive.
Now, I come from the studio background, and I'd say the majority of the people that are listening to this also come from that area. Will you be doing some version of, the studio standards, the classic models of the 414s, the 451s, the D12s, things like that? Is that on your agenda?
Yes. We won't say more to them.
I'll throw out, just because I've been addressing this a lot lately. Of course, I mean, pro audio is passionate about, and it's kind of where we develop all the high-end technology, the really boundary pushing stuff, and we are developing everything from scratch now. So our own transducers, we're not taking anything from our past and just saying we're taking this design and we know how to make that, so let's put it out again, because there are so many copycat products out there already, the market is just flooded, and B, the company that was our heritage still exists as a brand, and they can still put things out, and there's no need to have a copy of something that they do. So a couple of the projects we're looking at now definitely take everything these engineers, we got people who've been there here with us for 35 years, their history of developing product, taking everything they know and putting it into what we've always wanted to do, which is to push things a little bit ahead instead of incremental revisions, to say, where would this classic product be now if we were at free reign? And now we do. So I think especially in the input transducer realm, that would be the microphones for pro audio, there will be some interesting surprises coming out. But again, we're developing everything from scratch, PCB layout, component choice. We're working on the actual capsules and everything from how we always wanted to do it from the ground up. So we have a nice modern platform from which to extend everything.
Well, please think of it a little bit like, you mentioned it before. There are these classic products, right? But as it happens in large corporations, the thinking was less, how can we improve the products, but how can we outsource them to make them a little bit more cost efficient? How can we save some money? How can we make profit, more profit? This is how large corporations have to work. And that's how, of course, even engineering had to follow. Now we are free in a position to go the other way around, to say, okay, yes, we've learned how you can outsource and outsource manufacturing to best cost countries and all the rest by staying or continuing your quality. And it happened. It was a big task, but it happened. But I think the major effort was into sustaining the current quality and saving money. what we are doing right now is we are pushing the technology and trying to make there some progress. You said before it's a very traditional thing, and it's, you know, transducers, but I think there is, and Thomas will, I think, confirm, as he said before, materials. There are new materials coming every year, which allow us, you know, there are even thinner materials, lighter weight materials, where you can get a faster response, you know, so that makes you, you can push the limits a little further, something that did not happen too much in the past. And I think that's a, it's a great way forward for us to push quality up.
Well, how do you guys, as a legacy manufacturer, because of the breadth of the products and the length of time that you've been making them, how do you look at today's clone microphone manufacturers? Do you look at them and do you think, wow, these guys make a really inferior product? Or do you look at them and say, that's not too bad? Generally, how does that come down for you?
Second one,
these are not too bad. Yeah,
I'd say case by case, but you know, the quality you can get these days, the value for money is amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
But we are coming from a professional background, and there is much more requirements connected to these products than simply provide a good good frequency response, good noise level, and so. I mean, we know these guys in the studios who were like you, who work with these things on a day by day basis. So it's there are a lot of other requirements. It has to be stable over a wide temperature range and humidity and
humidity and moisture
and also the directivity, the handling. You name it. And I think there's still a huge potential where we can differentiate our products versus the copy things. But honestly, yeah, we're not neglecting them. We're appreciating that they're quite good. But we'll find ways how we can do better.
there are so many little details, like, is the mic body resonant? Do you think about that in advance? Or on stage or for TV, do you need a matte microphone? A lot of them are silver and shiny, and that might be inappropriate for a professional stage production. There's so many tiny little details that, as a professional manufacturer, you know who the customer is in a great, really fine-tuned way.
But again, you know, we're definitely not arrogant and saying what they're doing is crap. They're doing a good job. Mm. But what, and I think that the story goes pretty well along with what I said before, is what you call the outsourced manufacturing or the copying, what happens wherever, is a copying right now. So if we would continue doing what we have been done the last years, I think it would be a wrong way. We now set the new standards, and they will be copied in a few years probably. Yeah, that's fine. But I think to push the limits is not what these manufacturers do. They don't push the limits.
One of the things that I find interesting in some of the copy makers is the fact that it all depends on the microphone that you're trying to copy. And if you don't have a good one to copy, then in fact, you're coming up with an inferior product. So that's one of the big problems.
The specific specimen that they're copying?
Yes.
And that, you think something like how many C12 clones are there out there, right?
Yes.
And then do they have a good example of a C12. I mean, I used to work at the Hit Factory. We had a huge mic cabinet there, and we knew which ones were the duds. That's why everyone writes the serial numbers down. Like, that one's a good one. You know. So true. If you just say we're going to make a C12 clone, but this is the first C12 you've heard, how do you know it's one of the good ones?
Yeah.
Good. That's a good point. Yeah. What's your reference model?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. How many, I should have asked you this up front. How many people are in the company right now?
21.
How many are engineers?
17.
Yeah.
Wow. Definitely an engineering-driven company, but that's great, as it should be. Okay, last question. I usually ask this of everybody. It's a little off the subject, but actually it isn't for you guys. I think it's more right on. From starting up Austrian Audio, I'm sure you've learned a lot about business. What is the best piece of business advice or the best lesson that you learned in starting Austrian Audio? Did somebody give you a piece of advice that was really important, or did you just learn something?
Oh, there are so many lessons. So many lessons learned over the last month. You know, it's not that long ago, and you learned a lot.
Keep friendly with your IT person.
Bugger, I messed that one up already.
There goes that.
It's the people that counts. It's the people and the team spirit.
Yeah, I mean, of course it is, but that's not a lesson learned, probably. You would be really amazed what the people are doing around here, you know. I mean, these are all very skilled acousticians and mechanical engineers and software developers and electronic guys. And you know, when we came to this office, everybody turned up with a screwdriver and a hammer, and we started to build these offices. And, you know, it's kind of a good spirit. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Thomas referred to.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lesson learned in the way that we have expected it. That if you pick the right people with the right team spirit and put them into a new ecosystem with a new inspiration, that the outcome will be much more than whatever was possible before. And I think that the lesson learned is that it worked out how we expected it.
Were you surprised at how quickly it came together?
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah, that all the people, they gave us a yes. Yeah.
It was interesting when we first sent out, you know, to all our friends, kind of an announcement that we are giving an evening where we want to introduce project, right? And we sent out 30 invitations, and 29 people turned up.
Wow!
So this was kind of, you know, you would expect, you know, some people saying, "Oh yeah, well, you know, why should we go there?" But it's really, I mean, this was really amazing, and so that was that all the people had the same or could feel our inspiration and could see what's possible. Yeah? And you can imagine, as Thomas mentioned in the beginning, there were some ideas around, and there were some companies, of course, trying to get hold of some of the people because they are specialists here and they are engineers here, and they got other offers. But they preferred to stay in the team and do something on their own together with the team. And I think another lesson learned really is that remain flexible. I really think, you know, there are coming things your way which you had written down in your plan differently, and there come other ideas to the table where you thought you probably have thought it all through. But I see it. It was the most important thing to see the last 2 months really as a large brainstorming session. Never say no from the beginning. Always say yes and evaluate later if it's a good idea. But I think that brings so much more ideas to the table, different to you have a plan, you follow it strictly. It might be a good plan, but it doesn't allow too many ideas to the table. And I think the best lesson I've personally, for me, learned is, you know, you sit here and you have a clear picture how it's going to be, and somebody opens the door and comes with a completely different idea. And don't allow yourself to say, oh, no, I've thought about it. But say, okay, yes, that might be a different idea and a different way to do it. I think that's for starting up, if you don't have big departments, you know, where everything goes automatically well anyway or is organized, I think that's, for me, the largest lesson learned is really follow ideas no matter if they come from the right department or not. Because I think the best ideas come from the wrong departments.
That's great advice. This is very exciting. I'm very happy for you guys. Good luck, Martin, Thomas, Kent. Thank you. And I hope to speak with you again soon, hopefully in person.
We'll come see you there. And thank you very much for giving us the opportunity here.
To find out more about Austrian Audio, go to austrian.audio. There's no .com or anything on this. This is austrian.audio, A-U-D-I-O. Or you can find them on Facebook or LinkedIn. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter for alerts to new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.